J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
Saw her dancing there by the record machine. She could not have been more than 17. Played my favorite tune. I knew pretty soon that broad, she would dance with me. Yeah, me. I love rock and roll. Put a dime in the jukebox, baby. Dig that rock and roll. Come on and dance with me. You are cold as ice. You will sacrifice our love. Take advice. Someday you'll pay the tab, I know. You are chilly, baby. Yeah. Under my thumb, that gal, she shot me down. My thumb, that chick, pushed me around. It's down to me, Jack. The difference in the threads she wears, down to me. Change has come, thumb. So hit me with your best shot. Hit me with that shot. Hit me with your best shot. Fire away. With great honor that I pay tribute to a marvelous human being, one groovy cat, Bruce Springsteen. The highway's jammed with broken heroes on a last chance power drive. Someone's on the run tonight. There is not one place to hide. Someday, girl, I do not know when, we'll get to that place, you and me. Take a stroll in the sun. Yeah, 'cause baby, let me tell ya, tramps like us, sweetheart, born to run. That lady's a tramp, she was born to run. Jog, baby. Yeah. I love rock and roll. Put some coin in the jukebox. Love that rock and roll. Come on and dance. I want you to dance with me. Dance with me, baby.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
9th of September, 2021, here at JCOnTheLine.com. How you doing, kids? The NFL begins tonight. Average price of a ticket, by the way, for tonight's Bucks-Cowboys game in Tampa, $582 for one ticket. And it's probably going to rain like hell, by the way. Speaking of sports, Cardinals did everything they could to blow the game last night, and somehow managed to hold on to win by one run. What you're watching in Adam Wainwright is nothing short of amazing. And at one point, Danny Mac did bring up the point that you had Adam Wainwright out there, he's 40. You got Yachty, he's 39. And Albert, standing over at first base while he's 41. This is like that Clint Eastwood movie where a bunch of old guys went into outer space. It's sort of like what K-Hits did in the early part of the 2000s when they brought back me and John Hewlett and Radio Rich and all that and said, all right, the old guys are supposed to have experience. Go ahead, show it now. See what you can do. But here's something really disturbing. The little boy from E.T., the little actor Henry Thomas, turns 50 today. Elliot turns 50. I hate to start the podcast with something that disturbing. All right, Joe Biden is going to give a speech tonight, and there are 6 points he's going to make with regard to the pandemic. And I know it has partly to do with mask mandates. Now, what that means, I don't know. You're going to have to wait to hear exactly what he says. In Miami, one school district. Okay, how long has school been in? A couple of weeks max. Okay, so down in Miami, they got one school district. Three teachers and 10 school administrators didn't just get COVID. They got COVID and died. 13 school administrators in one school district died. All this within the last couple of days. And sometimes I figure I'm wasting my time because all that the deniers will say is that these people probably died from something else. And this is what they always say. You can't convince anybody anything. Florida Panhandle going to get hit with another tropical storm today and over the course of the next 2 days, I guess. And severe storms hitting the northeastern seaboard. And both of those communities, both of those regions are still trying to recover from the ridiculous biblical level flooding of just, what, about a week ago. And then you got that story that surfaced yesterday about the nursing home in Louisiana. So they know the storm is coming, and they are told you got to get out of here. So they take the people from the nursing home, and they evacuate them to a giant warehouse. One problem, the warehouse was used for pest control chemicals, and several of the elders from the nursing home who were taken to the warehouse ended up dying. You know that line in the Skynyrd song, you got that right, you won't find me in an old folks home? That's me. There's no way I'll ever go into one of those things. I'll fight like hell before I let somebody put me in a nursing home. I'm not talking about like in the next week or two. I'm just talking about eventually somewhere down the line, hopefully way down the line, but I ain't going. That's all there is to it. Well, you know, the first thing about it, you can go to the nicest nursing home there is, and it's still just awful. It's still terrible. There are no nice nursing homes. Some of the lobbies might be nicer than others. You know, you walk in, oh, look at this. It looks like a hotel. Okay, great. As soon as you open the door to go back to where the rooms are, the first thing you're taken by is just they all smell like shit. They all smell like shit. You know why? Because they got a couple of hundred people shitting their pants all at the same time. Sorry to be so, skip it. Today is the beginning of the Elizabeth Holmes case. Now, are you familiar with this chick? She's like, no. I invented this new machine, and all you need is just like a pinprick of your finger to get a sample of blood. We put it in our machine. It'll analyze everything. You don't have to go to like all these different labs and go through all these different procedures. This is a novel invention. It's going to change medicine, and let's have some money from you. And boy, did they hand it over. The company, this Elizabeth Holmes created, I think it's called Theranos or something like that, but multi-billion-dollar operation, all of these celebrity investors, billions of dollars on the line. There's only one problem: the whole thing was a lie. She was a con man. There's no such thing as a machine that will do all that with blood. So she goes on trial, I believe it's today, and faces 20 years in prison. And guess what? All those investors aren't going to get back, you guessed it, their money. As a lot of you know, I have very mixed emotions about celebratory things related to 9/11. If you're in a boxing match and your opponent really drills you and, you know, makes you see stars, you don't stand there for the rest of the fight reminding everybody, boy, you really hurt me. That really hurt. Jesus, man, oh man, my head still hurts from this. Well, did it ever occur to anybody that every time we stand around crying. And I'm not saying that, you know, that the emotion is not real. The problem is, don't you sort of think it is emboldening our enemies? 20 years later, they can see all this stuff on satellite TV. They can see the way we're reacting. And the people who hate us are laughing their asses off. Because it's like, wow, it's 20 years later. Look at them all standing there. They're still crying about it. And again, I'm not saying that the emotion that people feel is not real, is not genuine. But you have to think about the consequences of your actions. And all I know is if I were one of the bad guys and I was watching this every year, and you're up to 20 years now, and I hate America, and I'm sitting over there on the rocks, and somehow somebody brings the TV by and goes, look at them. I would feel pretty good about myself if I were a terrorist. So maybe it'll be like, you know, Pearl Harbor Day or something like that, where eventually everybody will be like, oh, yeah. And the people walking around going, you know, 9/11, never forget. Who's going to forget 9/11? Who is going to forget September 11th? Like somebody planning their wedding. Honey, I got the banquet hall and the band really, really cheap. Oh, really? When are we going to get married? I got it scheduled for September 11th. Honey, don't you know why everything is so discounted for September 11th? Because nobody wants to get married on September 11th. And she goes, why? What's September 11th? That's never going to happen. Who's going to forget 9/11? But my feelings aren't always that important. It is the feelings of the audience. And I happen to know for a fact that every time people hear the recording of how we, Brian McKenna, Karen Kelly, our traffic guy, Tim Gilbert, who also happened to be a pilot, how we handled the live coverage of 9/11. So that is going to be part of our replay segment tomorrow on the podcast. So you can check that out. Two nights ago on NBC, Seth Meyers churned out one of the most amazing hours of television I've seen in quite some time because it involved his buddy John Mulaney. Now, John Mulaney, you probably know, great stand-up comic, really, really funny guy, and a writer on Saturday Night Live. He was the guy who wrote all of those pieces for Stefan. That when we were talking with Bill Hader on the show a couple of years ago, we had this conversation about John Mulaney and about that character.
The A-List Interview.
Saturday Night Live alum Bill Hader and the birth of his character, Stefan.
It's so funny because John Mulaney, the guy that I write those with, he and I were trying to turn it into a sketch, and it was just never gelling as a sketch. And when we did it on Update the first time, we went, oh, that was pretty good. People seem to really like that. Just two shows later, Lorne Michaels asked us to do it again. And when I came out, it got a big reaction, just me coming out, and I went, whoa. And I remember coming over, and John was like, did you hear everybody? They started cheering. Did you hear how loud everyone was cheering? Can you believe that?
Okay, so on Seth Meyers, two nights ago, out comes John Mulaney, and everybody knows that he's been in rehab for the last couple of months. Some people might say, well, this is in poor taste because they're laughing about the fact that he just came out of rehab, but stick with it because it really was amazing television the other night.
You obviously know what an intervention is. You're a smart guy, and it was my memory of it was how quickly you tried to tell all of us. Like, you were like, don't, I get it. It's an intervention, I get it, we're good, I agree.
I remember walking in and going, okay. Okay. And then I needed to be the smartest person in the room, even at the intervention. So I remember saying to all of you, before you all read your letter, I have a drug problem and I need help just to scoop.
Right.
Scoop you so that...
Yeah, so we all had to go through and cross out the part
where we told you had a drug problem. I got no intro now.
Or now we had to say, we were like, as you previously mentioned.
You know, it's like John says, you have a drug problem.
You, there was a wonderful professional there, a professional interventionist. And she was doing what a professional does. And you were very much like, am I allowed to jump in?
Yeah.
Like, you very much wanted to let her know that you were ready to get past...
You're doing a kind version of how I came off, I think. I recall a few times going, I know what an intervention is. and the worst part was, and I am, I do regret this, that I, two things I kept doing. I kept insisting I was sober at the intervention. Mm-hmm. Remember when I looked at everyone and I went, I'm sober now. I'm sober right now. I wasn't.
Yeah.
I was on, I remember when I kept going to the bathroom, that was for drugs. So, but then the other thing that still sticks, do you remember when I insisted on getting the credit for days I hadn't used drugs?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really weird hill to die on in the middle of an intervention, to be like, I want you all to acknowledge that Monday and Tuesday I didn't do any drugs. And everyone was like, okay, we acknowledge that. What was it like on your end?
Well,
because I got to be high during it.
Right.
In like, so I, so it was it an awkward affair?
Yeah, it was awful. It was, I look, I'm always very happy to be your friend, and I'm very happy to be in your presence. And this year, I was lucky to spend a lot of time with you, and it was a real roller coaster, but I'm very happier on the other side of it. I am so happy for you and Olivia. This is very exciting news. I love you very much, and I'm glad you're doing well.
I love you, Seth. I, you know, you guys saved me from drugs, and Olivia and this baby have helped save me from myself and this early journey out of recovery. And yeah, I don't have a joke for that. I'm really grateful to you, buddy. Thank
I'm
you.
Grateful to
I
you.
Love you.
I love you. Thank you for being here.
Now, that's only part of it. If you get a chance to get online and see the entire segment, I would highly recommend it. It's actually, I think it's three segments, but I'm sure they'll slap them all together. And it's pretty amazing to watch. And what was sort of buried in all of that is that his marriage fell apart during all of this. And in the process, he has hooked up with actress Olivia Munn, who you may recall from having been in a relationship long term with Aaron Rodgers up there in Green Bay. And not only are they together, and not only does he say that she pretty much had a major hand in saving his life and getting him off drugs, but also they're going to have a baby. They're going to have a baby together. And again, if you are unfamiliar with John Mulaney, get yourself familiar with it. He's got a couple of stand-up specials on cable and stuff that you can pull up on the internet. I'm sure he's a very, very entertaining guy, and we wish him the best. Also, Jennifer Lawrence, by the way, has announced that she is pregnant with her first child. Sometimes people of a certain age will talk about a TV series from the 1960s called Room 222. And one of the reasons we liked it is because it was about high school and teachers and sort of like, you know, that period of your life where all this sort of stuff is going on in high school. And it was, I believe, a little bit ahead of its time. They dealt with racial stuff, you know, because they had people of color in the high school. And but one of the main reasons that young boys liked the show was there's an actress by the name of Karen Valentine. And let me just tell you something. At the time for Prime, oh yeah, oh yeah. And so a lot of us were just watching it for that. But the guy who played the principal in that movie is a guy, actor by the name of Michael Constantine. He also played the father with the Windex in My Big Fat Greek Wedding. He was spraying Windex all over the place. He was a really, really talented guy, and he was around forever. He was 94 years old, and he died a little over a week ago, Michael Constantine. David Chase was on with Jimmy Kimmel the other night. The Many Saints of New York is coming out in a couple of weeks. It's the Sopranos prequel movie. And David Chase, while doing an interview, it was sort of like pulling teeth. He gives a lot of very short, you know, one-word answers and stuff. But Kimmel was trying to get stuff out of him. And in particular, some of the stuff that ended up on the TV show and will end up in the movie that relates to his own personal experiences. And also the fact that James Gandolfini's son is playing the young Tony Soprano in this new movie. Here it is.
Now, Michael Gandolfini was how old when you guys were shooting the show? He's a little boy.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was born during the beginning of the show. First year, I think. Second year. And I only knew him as maybe that 10 at the most.
Mm-hmm.
I remember walking on a path to the location, and he and his father came along, and his father saw me and said, "Hello, Satan," and kept going.
Was that his loving nickname for you?
That, and he called all the writers vampires because we would steal from the actors' real lives. We never stole anything from him. We stole a lot from Tony Sirico. I guess that's what he was talking about.
Interesting. Yeah. And a lot of that show and even scenes from this movie are based, as I understand it, on your personal life, on your relationship with your mother.
Who, well, the whole show was based on that.
Famously became the model for Tony's mother, Livia. And also, there's a scene, and again, I hope I'm not revealing too much, but there's a scene where young Tony Soprano is in the office with his guidance counselor.
Right. I was in the guidance counselor's office a lot, but what I think what you're referring to is when the guidance counselor talks to his mother mm-hmm. and recounts something that Tony told her.
Right.
About this really warm night between them, very nice, when he was a little kid. That happened to me. My father was painting in the living room, painting in the living room. And my mother read me this book. And she was very sweet and nice. It was blowing storms. She was not like that often. So that's why that's in the movie.
Interesting.
Yeah. The Many Saints of Newark is going to be coming out. Oh, and by the way, David Chase says, absolutely try to see this movie in a theater. It's a communal experience. They spent quite a bit of time talking about that and how, because he was like, okay, well, I watched The Sopranos on my TV, so I'll just watch this on my TV. He's like, no, this is a movie. This is different. You should see this in a theater. So take that for what it's worth. All right, late night tonight, John Cena on with Jimmy Fallon. Kimmel's got Shaquille O'Neal. Sarah Paulson, Casey Musgraves, on with Colbert. Dr. Phil's on with James Corden. And Seth Meyers has Amanda Peet. Another, this woman, you know, this woman that calls herself the Long Island Medium. She's just some New York chick, and she has the world conned into believing that she is some sort of a medium and she can speak with the dead. So she's going to do a 9/11 thing, and this is just disgraceful behavior on the part of TLC. But again, it is TLC. The bar is already pretty low. CBS Fall Preview is on at 8 o'clock tonight on CBS, but a lot of people are going to be watching football tonight. 16th season premiere of Football Night in America, that's at 6 on NBC, and then the 35th season premiere of Sunday Night Football on Thursday. That makes sense to somebody out there, and that's at 7:20. You got Tampa hosting the Dallas Cowboys for the first game of the NFL season. The weather may not be great. Did you see this thing yesterday? You know, the great Ted Simmons. I cannot tell you how happy I am for Ted Simmons that he is in the Hall of Fame now officially. So during the Hall of Fame induction speech, Derek Jeter took a shot. There was one writer who didn't vote for him, and he called him out. They didn't call him out by name, but it will only be a matter of time before everybody figures out who it is. But one son of a gun, one guy who votes in the Hall of Fame did not vote for Derek Jeter. Unbelievable. Speaking of baseball, batting 1,000 is perfection, of course. That's why we say bat 1,000 if you do everything right. But a 300 baseball average, obviously considered exceptional. That means you can fail 70% of the time and you're still one of the best players. And that's why hitting a baseball is arguably the hardest thing to do in sports. Now, we've talked about this before because they say, you know, hitting a curveball is the most difficult thing to do in sports. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that if I took you out on a baseball field and you had even a minimum amount of athletic ability, I could, especially if you knew it was coming, if you know the curveball is coming, I could teach you how to hit a curveball. And I'm not even a great hitter, but I'm on the other end throwing it, so I'm maybe the second best person to talk to about hitting a curveball. I think I could teach most people to hit a curveball. I could not teach you how to catch up with a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. That I could not teach you to do. So I think that that is one of the most difficult things to do in sports. But as I've pointed out before, I think the answer to this question is repeating a championship year. So in other words, you're the Tampa Bay Bucks coming back, winning twice on, you know, in consecutive seasons. That, to me, is the most difficult thing to do in sports. I was talking to a couple of athletes about this. Rick Horton said that anything on skates, I think that's because he can't skate. So, you know, everything's relative. So anyhow, so you look at the speed of the pitch. Average fastball comes at you more than 90 miles an hour. It's fired from less than 60 feet away. And if you are a guy like, oh, you know, Randy Johnson, who by the time he releases the ball, is probably about 5 feet closer to you than the average pitcher with all of his extension and everything. Plus, he hid the ball very, very well. So that cuts down on your reaction time even more. So the pitch is coming at you more than 90. It's fired from less than 60 feet away. 60 feet, 6 inches is where the rubber is, but where the pitcher releases, the ball is closer. And that gives the batter about 150 milliseconds to decide whether or not to swing and where to swing. On top of that, the ball is only in the strike zone for less than 10 milliseconds. That's the amount of time that the ball is in the spot where the batter can make contact. 10 milliseconds. That's like that right there. On top of all this, you got a round ball. You're trying to hit it with a rounded piece of wood, so the margin of error for making solid contact is roughly half the width of your phone's SIM card. Well, say that again. So you got a round ball, a rounded piece of wood, so the margin of error for making solid contact is roughly half the width of your phone's SIM card. All of this from an engineering professor who compared it to trying to hit a bullet with another bullet. So how do batters do it? How do they make contact? Well, that same professor says it's not so much about how fast a batter can swing as it is about how fast he can stop himself from swinging at pitches he recognizes as ones that he would be not likely to hit. You have to have the ability to identify pitches, which again leaves the batter about 150 milliseconds to do so. That's something that comes with experience, but it still doesn't make it easy by any stretch of the imagination. Oh, and by the way, on this date 56 years ago, today, Sandy Koufax pitched a perfect game at Dodger Stadium against the Chicago Cubs. So back in the 60s, if you threw a perfect game against the Cubs, does it really still count? I mean, they weren't exactly a first division team, as we used to say. Miss America trying to modernize again. The organization says it's going to, quote, define women's wellness as being based on optimal health rather than physical appearance, whatever the hell that means. Two Red Sox fans who didn't even know each other decided to go in together on the 50-50 raffle the other night at Fenway and ended up splitting the prize they won, which was $18,000. The celebrity, I stress the word celebrity, cast for the new season of Dancing with the Stars includes Cobra Kai villain Martin Cove, Melanie C, that would be Sporty Spice, Brian Austin Green, and country singer Jimmy Allen, whoever the hell that is. Bob Odenkirk back to work on Better Call Saul. A little over a month after suffering a heart attack on the set, he said he's just happy to be surrounded by good people. Happy to be anywhere, as they say. Birthdays today from Brokeback Mountain, Michelle Williams, 41, Michael Bublé, 46, Eric Stone Street from Modern Family is 50. As we pointed out, Henry Thomas Elliott from E.T. is 50. Hugh Grant, 61, Angela Cartwright, that would be Penny Robinson on Lost in Space. Man, did I have a thing going for her. She's 69. Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics is 69. Tom Wopat, one of the Dukes of Hazzard, is 70. Joe Theismann, still to this day, the greatest celebrity sports injury ever, I think, 72 today. Elvis made the first of his three appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show back on this date 65 years ago. That was 1956. John Lennon's Imagine album came out 50 years ago today, and 3 years ago in 2018, Les Moonves stepped down as the head of CBS after being targeted by sexual harassment allegations. Charlie Rose went out on that too. Matt Lauer, man, Matt Lauer. Matt Lauer had a button under his desk that he could push that would close and then lock the door from behind. You are now trapped with Matt Lauer. And I know a lot of women, my friend Sandy, she was always talked about him being the most attractive man she ever saw. You should talk to her today and see if, with all of the news that was revealed about Matt Lauer when that scandal hit, whether she still has it for him, whether that has altered her state of mind on that. That would be a fascinating conversation to have, and I may just do it. When I can, I try to finish the show with a couple of good slacker stories. A woman from Chicago missed her flight home from Fort Lauderdale on Monday and made a bomb threat when she found out the plane had already left the gate. She was with her husband and son when it happened. Her family says she was worried her son would miss school the next day, so that's why she phones in a bomb threat. In Maryland, a mailman was caught delivering mail by tossing it out of the truck onto people's lawns. The Postal Service is investigating. And I don't know if this was a publicity stunt or what the hell was going on, but there was a soccer team in Germany that played a game in the nude. So all the players were out there running around with nothing on, but I'm assuming their socks with the shin guards and their cleats, and that's it. They're running around out there playing soccer. But the action had to be stopped a few minutes in when a fully clothed fan ran onto the field. Good morning, everybody! All right, that's it. Another J.C. Corcoran podcast for the 9th of September 2021 is in the can. We publish at 7 every morning. It's absolutely free. If you miss a podcast, don't worry. They're all archived right here and on some other platforms, too. Email me at jc@jconline.com. Follow me on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Thanks to our technical wizard, Everett Marshall. Back tomorrow, and part of our presentation will be our 9/11 coverage, and then we'll break for the weekend. So that's it. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.